Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Geeked Podcast is your weekly energy boost of the world's fandoms and stories you love.
Hosted by Princess Weeks, author, YouTuber, and connoisseur of all things Sailor Moon and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and Tessa Netting, actress, musical theatre nerd, and lover of all fictional villains.
Each week they will break down the top stories in the land of geekdom and then take a deep dive into the lore of Netflix worlds bigger than our own. Worlds like Stranger Things,
ooh,
The Umbrella Academy.
Oh, lovely.
Of course, The Witcher,
yes,
and many more. This podcast is a must listen for anyone who is scouring Twitter feeds and fan wikis dying to theorize and talk about their new show that they are obsessed with.
New episodes of The Geeked Podcast come out weekly.
Follow The Geeked Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow at Netflix Geeked on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok.
Harmonize with me and hold me tight all through the night. You're shining bright. I'm your oyster, baby. You're my pearl.
Bills.
What is it, Tom?
Michael's here. Michael, we're very excited to have you here.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here. It's been a while since I've seen you.
Yeah, man. The last
And
time...
you've never seen me.
I've never seen Billy. Just on the big screen.
The last time we were supposed to hang out, you had invited me to, now I might be getting this wrong, but was it a Hawaiian influence party at your house? Was it Hawaiian?
It was a tiki party, yeah. And that was the last party that we had before the pandemic at the house. And there was like, I don't know, 300-400 people there. It was insane. We had a tiki band and all that. And it was sort of the party to end all party as it ended up being.
As it did end up?
Yeah.
I seem to remember the ticket was kind of like, maybe like a damsel in distress running away from a volcano or something like that. And it was like Hawaiian influenced.
Yes.
Thing,
yeah.
Right?
It was a whole tiki. You have to understand, I have a whole tiki bar in the backyard and the whole thing.
Really?
Oh yeah. It's a whole thing. Yes. Oh. It's kind of like visiting some corner of Adventureland that you've never been to.
I regret not being in town for that party. Well, you should have gone in my stead.
Yeah, well, if I'd been invited, I would have done.
Yeah. Maybe there will be another one.
Maybe next
well,
time.
I'd like to come
we need,
along.
We need like the comeback party, so we got to do that.
That's true.
Yes, so we'll do it.
You didn't do the music for the tiki thing in Disney, did you?
No. That was the Sherman Brothers.
Oh, was it?
Sherman Brothers back in the 60s or late 50s, probably.
I mean, you've done almost everything, Michael. Your resume is, I would say up to now, the most impressive resume that we've had on the show.
Read it out, Tom.
Well, I mean, I don't even need to read it.
Just read a little bit.
I'll just tell you a few things, right, Bills?
Right.
Op, which we'll get into Op at some point, because that's almost transcended the work that you've done in that film, and it has like a life of its own.
It really does.
I said to Dom when we were talking about you coming, I said, even if you've only did that, not even all of that movie, but just one tune from that movie, I would be happy with that.
Yeah, extraordinary. Obviously,
carry on, Dom.
Well, the iconic music from Lost, the opening, I don't know if you remember the opening music for Lost, but it went like this. That was it.
They took pretty much, right? That was the ending. They took one of the drum hits from one of the sessions and put that on there.
That was Lost.
Yeah.
Star Trek, of course, the recent Star Trek films.
Yep.
The Incredibles, Inside Out, which again we'll get into. Coco, which
I love Coco.
Almost ended with Michael. Did you work on Super 8 as well? JJ Super 8?
Yeah, Super 8, yeah.
I'll tell you some more things here, Bills. All the Mission Impossible films recently, Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, Star Trek. What else am I missing out? Ratatouille, my God. Planet of the Apes, Zootopia, Star Wars, Rogue Nation, Spider-Man, No Way Home, the recent The Batman film, which we'll talk about as well.
Just watched that, actually.
Jurassic World Domination, which is Dominion.
It's the newest one.
Which has not come out yet.
All three of them, but the newest one comes out in July, I think.
And the recent Thor, Love and Thunder, which has not come out.
Yes.
Your resume is insane.
This is a good guest.
And we met during when I was on that TV show Lost.
Yeah.
Now, you wrote not only the very, very short kind of clipped, almost like joke-like theme tune to the song, right? Because everyone
there was two things on Lost. There was the opening sort of like, ooh, thing. Now, that That JJ did that at home.
On a synth.
On a synth, yeah. And that was that. And then the boom thing was just taken from one of our sessions. We had it, and it was a big drum that we used. It was the end of some cue. And I think Brian Burke was the one who was like, oh, that should be the thing we use for the...
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so that was that. And that show was one of my favorite shows I ever worked on.
Yeah.
I mean, just incredible.
We were doing a music quiz, Billy and I, a few months ago now. And we were scrolling through a few things, and Billy's saying, do you know this? Do you know that? And Billy played me a song from something. And I went, oh, wait, I know this. I know this. It's a sad moment in a TV show. One of the characters dying, I think. Billy's like, yeah. I went, no, I can't think. It was when Charlie dies in Lost. He was like, you probably should know that.
You should probably know
alert!
That.
Yeah. You should probably,
But it's like 15 years. If you don't know that Charlie died in Lost, it's 15 years.
It's fine. You're the people that they, you know, they sow what they weap.
Yeah. It's
so been a long reap, enough. Reap.
It's been a long enough time for that. And you and I share a good friend, JJ. And what I've noticed with JJ over the years, I mean, this is true of all friends. If you really want to have a fun conversation with him, ask them to talk about something that they're passionate about.
And his would be music.
JJ is obsessed with music.
Yes, right? he is obsessed with music. Actually, I'll tell you, the first time I met JJ, so you have to understand, I was working in video games at that time. I was scoring video games. I did a game called, I did The Lost World, Jurassic Park, this video game, a PlayStation game. And then I did a follow-up, Medal of Honor.
Ooh.
So those games were out in the world. I was trying to get a job working in television, scoring TV shows, right? Because I just wanted to kind of build and move and do more things. But no one would hire me. Nobody. Everyone kept saying, and I did a million interviews, but they would all say, no, you know, video games aren't like TV. You can't possibly know how to do this. And even though those projects were both like helmed by Steven Spielberg was producing them because they were his movies and he was really into them. And that didn't matter. So I was sitting there one of these days and I was just kind of depressed because I couldn't get anywhere. Couldn't get anything. And I got this email from this guy named JJ. And I was like, who is this? And he's like, hey, my name is JJ Abrams. I wrote Armageddon and Regarding Henry. I'm about to do a new TV show for ABC. And I was wondering if you'd want to come in and talk about doing the music for it. I love the music you do on the games. So I was like, what? I thought somebody was joking with me. I thought it was like, you know, someone was screwing. But I called the number. He answered the phone and he's like, hey, do you want to come in this week? So I went over to Disney. I got in, I walk into his office and we start talking about synths and different things. And he went, you know, off the charts. He loves that stuff. So he's like, well, come here. So we went into this other room where he had all his keyboards set up and we started messing around with that. Yes.
Right. Pull this thing out, put that in there.
Started talking about all that. So in the middle of talking about that, this woman comes in for him to look at and make sure that the hair was good and the costume was fitting and everything, because they were going to start shooting, I think, in a day or two. And that was Jennifer Garner. And I at the time, I had no idea who Jennifer Garner was. And I was like, and then Bradley came in as well. A couple minutes later, he came in and all these people who are now just like, you know, huge and massive. This day that I met JJ was like also meeting all these other people in the cast. And I ended up on the show. And then that's kind of how that all went crazy from there.
I remember saying to JJ, and because I have a couple of synths that I mess about with at home. In fact, JJ set me up with the whole setup with a Moog. He was like, do you have a Moog? I said, no. He said, okay, I'm sending you some stuff. Sent me a Moog, sent me some other little contraptions that you can attach to your Moog to make it sound different and all this kind of stuff. And then we were talking one day, because I've seen that suite of his that's just wires.
It's
and
crazy.
If you unplug one thing, it makes a different sound, and then you plug it back in again. And I said to Jay, does it not slightly frustrate you that maybe you find found a sound, and then if you unplug one wire, that sound might disappear forever? And JJ said, no, that's the thing I like the most about this process, is maybe you're creating a sound via the synth that has never been heard before and may never get heard again.
That's right.
And you just have to have the moment,
yep,
which is a beautiful kind of lesson in art.
It's a great thing. But I mean, for the guys that used to do that all the time, you know, they'd have sheets and tracks and they would write down every number. This goes to that. This goes to that. It was like, you know, puzzle pieces. It was, it's insane. But that stuff is fun.
Super fun.
So what is your musical background then, Michael?
My musical background is piano lessons.
Right.
As a kid. But not like intense piano lessons. Right. Like the guy down the street, Mr. Coletti, taught me piano.
And since 5 years old sort of thing?
I would say from like six to maybe 12 or 13. And then maybe I went back for a little bit when I actually was interested in it. Because at that time, I was just like, oh, he had to go take piano lessons.
Yeah,
I was
work, like,
take a piano. I hated practicing, hated all that. And then there came a time when I started getting more interested in music. And I was like, you know, I'm going to go back to Mr. Coletti and take some lessons with him. Now I'm much older.
Yeah.
Went back down there and I started asking him. The thing I wanted to know was, like, I understood I could pick out a melody on the piano and that was fine. Like, I could play Star Wars, whatever.
Yeah.
But what I didn't understand was what was happening underneath all of that. And and he goes, oh, you mean like chord progressions? I'm like, I don't know, maybe. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's like this. So you start on a C, you go to an F, you go to da, da, da. And I started doing that. And I was like, oh my, that like blew my mind. Mm. It blew my mind because you could change the character of anything by the chords you put underneath it.
Okay.
So any melody could become either, say, happy or melancholy or just terrifying or whatever it is, depending on what you do, what the support you give it. Mm. So that to me was fascinating. Now, that was just more of like me very interested in music. I was never on a path to become a film composer.
Yeah.
Never thought that's what I'd be doing. I thought I'd be, it depends on when you ask me. If you ask me when I was a kid, I would have been building models and blowing them up for movies, you
nice.
Know, like in a special effects department somewhere. Yeah. That's what I loved. So I was thinking I would work in special effects and I made movies all my life growing up. That's all I did was make movies.
Right.
So I have tons of movies. So I just wanted to make movies.
Uh-huh.
Music I kind of fell into and it just sort of like took over everything. And then before you know it, like 20 years go by and you know, all these movies and all this stuff. And you're like, wow, that is not at all what I thought I'd be doing.
Right.
You know, no idea. Because I didn't go to conservatory. I didn't do all that. I ended up studying so much on my own. Once I really got more serious about it and kind of interested, it was really a hobby. And I would write music on weekends and that night. And I read every book I could. I took some classes at Juilliard. I didn't quite fit in there. Anytime you try to write a melody there, they would smack your hand like the nuns would smack, you know, just like, no, it's not about this. It's about exploration and atonal and figuring out new textures and sounds. I was like, I just want to write a melody. I just want to, you know, so it didn't go that great for me over there. I appreciate the time there, but it was like, not for me. When I moved out to LA, you know, my main job at that time was working in publicity. And I was an assistant in the publicity offices of Disney.
Right.
So I was on the Disney lot working there. And then I'd go to school at UCLA at night and learn orchestration and arranging and all of that stuff. Again, at that point, I started thinking, well, maybe this is something I could do. I don't know. And then the video game, it's such a long, crazy thing. So I went from the publicity. Then I got a job producing video games for Disney as a producer. And then eventually they started asking me to write music for those video games. So it was like Maui Mallard, it was Gargoyles, it was Pocahontas, a little bit of that, or, you know, some stuff on Lion King. It was like, it was crazy. So I was setting up a small studio in a space like this. And I started writing music for them and then did the same thing over at DreamWorks. I was producing video games, but also writing music for them. And eventually I was like, can I just write the music? Do I have to produce the video games? And they were like, I said, I would love to quit and just work at home and do this. And they were like, great. So that's when I did Lost Worlds, when I did Medal of Honor. And then there's like 5 Medal of Honors. And I also did Call of Duty and all these other video games that are, you know, sort of these crazy big games of their time. But at that time, I was just thinking, in the same way I was thinking, how am I going to get from video games to TV? Once I got into television, I was like, how am I going to get into movies? I want to do movies. I want to score movies now. That was the same thing. No one would hire me because, you know, television's very different from, you know, you couldn't possibly understand what it's like to score a film. You do television, and that's a very different thing. And I was like, okay. But on Alias and on Lost, as you know, we did full orchestra every week. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom for every episode. And it was a grind, but it was great. It was so great to work with the musicians who are the greatest in the world, you know, every week. So that was such a great training ground for me. And the thing that sort of changed it all was Brad Bird, when Disney was, or Pixar was doing The Incredibles. They had hired John Barry at first, you know, and he was supposed to be on that film. And for whatever reason, that didn't work out. So they had spent all their money. They were looking for a new composer, but they had no money. And so since Lost and Alias, mainly Alias is a Disney property, the people at Disney said, oh, we're working with this young guy who's been doing this show. Maybe that'll work. And so they sent all of the stuff up to Brad. I also had another friend independently. who gave stuff to the editor for him to play because he would put it into the cut. And then Brad would be like, well, what is this music? What is this? And they were like, oh, this is one of Teddy's friends, my friend Teddy Newton. And he's like, well, let's meet him. So I went up, met Brad. And then that sort of sealed the deal for movies. So, but that was a movie that I thought every inch along the way I was going to get fired because right. I was like, I had no yeah. right to be sitting up there doing a Pixar movie after people like, you know, Randy Newman and Thomas Newman had been scoring their movies.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, so I never, ever thought that I would have survived that process, but I did, thankfully. Yeah. And it was a blast. And I became best friends with Brad Bird, who's just one of the greatest. You should talk to Brad.
Yeah, he should get us a job, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
I'd love that. He says, I'd love to work with Pixar.
Using the internet without ExpressVPN, that's like walking your dog in public without a leash. Now, some of the time that might be okay. But there might come a day when your dog will run away, or even worse, get dog-napped. Imagine it. Terrible. Anyway, it's better to be careful, especially when it's as simple as using ExpressVPN. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, whether it's a cafe, hotels, airports, wherever, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can gain access and steal all your personal data. But ExpressVPN creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet so that they can't steal it. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. That's a long time. And ExpressVPN works on all your devices, your phone, your laptop, your tablet, even your smart TV. And it's super easy to use. It's an app and you click one button and you're protected. When I'm in a hotel, airport, wherever, I never use the internet without ExpressVPN, especially when I'm doing something on the banks or credit cards. Keep it secure. And you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN free at expressvpn.com/onion. That's expressvpn.com/onion. expressvpn.com/onion.
Now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. Guys, it's been a rough couple of years. I think a lot of people have experienced burnout. I know I have too. And burnout isn't always associated with being busy too much at work or having a crazy life. Sometimes it can just be due to the fact that there's a lot going on right now. The news is a stressful thing to watch, and we could all take a little bit of time just to kind of relax, maybe have our life feel a little bit less overwhelming, and just enjoy ourselves a little bit. BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talking with someone can help you figure out what's causing stress in your life. For me, it always really helps to just have someone to talk to, and that's the whole deal with BetterHelp. You can access these people online, super easy, and they can provide some therapy to get you through those tougher times in our day. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/onion.
But isn't that the weird thing, isn't it? When you take that step to, whether you call it a step up, but a step to somewhere else, you feel like I'm not worthy. We've been talking about this for the last imposter few
syndrome.
Weeks, this
exactly.
imposter syndrome that a lot of people have.
Yes.
And you forget that somebody has to do it. Someone has to do it.
Well, what you eventually realize, and it takes some time and it takes some trust, is you realize nobody knows anything.
Right.
Nobody knows anything.
We're all still figuring it out,
right? Everyone is just doing their best guess. Right. You know what I mean?
At that moment, I'll make this.
Yes.
Like when you get, as you're talking about melodies, your melodies are just incredible, by the way, if we can just say. But like, if you can pick out that melody,
yeah,
then everything else will work out.
Yes, exactly.
As you're saying about putting the different chords down,
yep.
You went to UCLA to learn orchestration.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing that you did that.
Yeah.
And even, there must have been something in the back of your mind that you're like,
no, exactly.
This and is sort of going somewhere.
And I've always like gone after things, but with the thought in my mind that it's probably never going to work
yeah.
out. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the less you expect the happier you can stay,
yeah.
you know, but I think that realization that once you realize that everyone at every point in whatever they're doing is just trying to figure it out, just like you, mm-hmm. there's a freedom in that,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
and then you become comfortable failing. I'm okay. Look, failure is the thing you shoot for because it means you're trying for something,
brilliant.
Right?
Yeah.
It means you're trying for something. Right. So, if you fail, the worst that can happen is you learned something.
Right.
You learn from it. But every you guys too, all of us, we're like whatever, we're no better than almost, you know, than anybody else around. Like
sure.
everyone, you've just been given the opportunity and you delivered on it and you continue to get to do that. So right. it's
yeah, we fail all the time. You especially.
Yeah, I fail most days. No, you're absolutely right.
It's
and
true.
I'm trying to teach that to my son just now, who's very into music just now. He's
yep.
playing everything. And I'm just like, don't be afraid to like, you
yeah.
know, sing awfully or play the wrong thing and
yes.
try that chord. Just because someone said that chord doesn't fit, there might you try it.
Yeah,
there are no wrong chords, right?
There's no rules to anything. That's what's so great about art. There's no rules.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and when everyone likes to impose these rules or they have these self-imposed rules, but it's all BS. And
yeah.
you just go for what makes you feel happy and what feels right to you.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Yeah.
You know, the second you try to do what you think someone else would do, you're dead in the water.
For yeah. sure.
You know?
Can we just ask you a little bit about Pixar? Because correct me if I'm wrong, but it's always felt like to me that music is especially important for Pixar.
Yeah.
That they almost have a very established ethos over at Pixar. You know, obviously we know the thing about tugging on the heartstrings in terms of the script and also the complement of the music, but would it be fair to say that Pixar take their music a little bit more seriously than other places?
Yes, they do. They do. And that's why I love that place. I think they take everything more seriously
right.
than other places. Right. You know, the thing about Pixar is that I love the most is that those characters are treated as if they are real people.
Mm.
You know, every character you work with is treated as if it was a real person in your world. You know, when I work on, everyone always says, oh, cartoons, that must be easier than scoring like a live action. You know, like, it's the exact same thing because whether I'm scoring a scene where you're getting strung up and hung and lost, you know, like in a real situation, or if I'm dealing with Remy, who is the rat who is just trying to figure his life out, like they're both characters and they're both real and they both deserve to be treated as real characters.
Mm.
So much animation treats them as jokes,
yeah,
treats them as just a, like a puppet or something, yeah. you know, and a two-dimensional silly sort of thing. Whereas Pixar has a very different approach to it. And it happens to fit in exactly how I feel about scoring, which is whatever's on that screen, treat it as if it's real and try to empathize with how would you feel if you were that person or that rat or mm-hmm. that whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, fish, doesn't matter. Because ultimately they're telling human stories, but through these crazy characters,
mm-hmm.
whether it is the fish or the rat or whatever. And it's just treating them like humans. And I think that respect that they have is part of what you're talking about. That
yeah.
respect for the characters
yeah.
is everything.
And just to kind of break down a little bit the practicalities of what you do, let's say for the example of Pixar, do you get delivered a cut of the movie and they say, hey, Michael, we need a minute and a half here. We need 3 minutes here. We need the closing song here. Like, how does that work for you practically?
Basically, I'll go up there and I'll sit and we'll watch it. Together,
right.
you know, and we'll watch the whole thing.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And then what we'll do is kind of go through it again, but we'll stop and start. And we'll discuss. I think music should start here.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and they may say, we want music here. And I may say, I don't think you should have music there. Or it could be the opposite. I would say, I don't think you need it. They say, so it's a discussion throughout the whole thing, because right. we're trying to figure out what's the art. Because music, Brad, I remember when Brad first hired me for The Incredibles, it was like this arduous, long process. And I did demos and all of this crazy stuff. And, but when they finally hired me, he called me up and he was like, okay, Chiquino, you got the job. And he goes, I was like, that's amazing. Thank you so much. This is like crazy. And he was like, no, hold on. He goes, I just have to tell you something. I want you to know that your music could ruin my movie. Right. And I was just like, all this joy just went to like, oh my God, what did I get myself into here? What's going on? And he was like, he goes, bear with me. He goes, what I mean is, if your music isn't following the same story that I'm telling at every step of the way, if we are not holding hands the entire time, the audience is going to start thinking things that we don't want them to think. They're going to start feeling things we don't want them to feel, and they'll get distracted, and then they won't pay attention to the story. So you and I have to always discuss and figure out and just stay together and make sure we're telling the story the way it needs to be told. Because music can completely ruin a movie. And right. I've seen it. Just I'm hypersensitive to it. So almost everything I watch is so easily just like ruined by one wrong thing for me, because I'm like, it takes you out of the moment. And it's a subconscious thing too. Even if you don't know about music or how this all works, when you're watching something and something doesn't feel right, it could be any number of things, but in large amount of the times, it's because it's the wrong music playing under a particular scene. It's either pushing too hard or it's not pushing hard enough or it's big when it should be soft or soft when it should be big. And those are all these crazy, you can't just write a piece of music and throw it behind something and expect it to work. It's got to evolve and ebb and flow in the same way that the writer has taken the time to do with the script and the story, or the storyboard artists who are also a huge part of the story process up at Pixar.
I've seen little clips of the original Star Wars film, A New Hope, without music.
Yeah.
And it's terrible.
It's crazy, right?
It's just terrible. There's no drive. There's no drama. Yeah. It feels much more kind of cheap and homemade. Right. And then Williams brings in this orchestral, dramatic space opera thing.
He's a great storyteller too. Yeah. John is one of the best sort of like, he can zero in on those emotions so well, better than anybody. And that's really, I mean, I learned so much of that just by watching the movies he scored, by listening to his music and seeing what I used to do is I would take my tape recorder to the movie theaters. So I would go see Raiders of the Lost Ark or Empire Strikes Back, whatever it was. And I would record the whole movie. And I would at night listen to it under my pillow on the tape recorder. And I would just, every night, that's what I would do. And I would listen to the movie. And looking back, I realized that I learned so much doing that just by understanding how the music works with the story. Like you don't have the visuals to distract you. You can concentrate just on how the music, and it wasn't anything I was doing at the time, you know, figuring it out. It was just, I look back and all of those time listening to how music works with words, how it works with sound and all of that. And it was such an enlightening experience. I think that it helped me immensely just by, you know, pirating all those movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the process then, are you always brought in when it's a finished visual?
No, it's always different. Like a lot of the Pixar stuff, when I start on it, a lot of it could be storyboard still. You know, yeah. Like I just finished Lightyear. So Lightyear's going to be coming out soon. And and when I started working on that, there was a lot. It was a mix of boards of what they call previs, which is sort of just, you know, some of the action on rendered out in 3D, but not lit and not no details or any of that.
Yeah.
Characters walking around with their arms straight out. Yeah. So it's very strange looking stuff. But a lot of times I'll start in that when it looks like that. But I do like to at least see a version of the movie before I start writing for it, because I find that if I start writing for something, in most cases, Batman was different, but in most cases, I will wait till I see it before I write something.
Right? Okay.
You know, because when you read a script, you tend to envision your version of that movie.
Yeah.
Right. When you're reading something, and then you get on set or you see the final thing that they made and you're like, that's nothing like what I envisioned.
Yeah,
and then you're,
and I've wrote all this music.
Yes. And now nothing works. That, right? Yes. So I don't do that, because that's just double work. So I usually wait to see something and see what the tone is and what they're going for and trying to align with that. But so, Batman was different.
So the Batman, which I've just watched.
You saw it a couple of days ago, didn't you?
I was late to it. And it's brilliant. I loved it.
Oh, thanks.
It's really, and the music's incredible.
Thank you.
So why was that different?
That was different because Matt Reeves gave me the script to read. And he was like, read it because I want to. And it wasn't read it because here's what we're making. It was read it. Tell me what you think. If there's anything,
right.
Give me notes. So I was like, okay. So I read it and I loved it and it was amazing. And it felt like, I was like, how are you going to make this movie? It's so sprawling and epic and not in an action way, but in a character way, this crazy, Matt is one of my favorite directors to work with. Matt is incredible and he's very intense and he goes deep as he can on the storytelling. But when I read that script, I got such a vibe for what he was doing. And after talking about it with him, that I went ahead and wrote that theme for that, that's in the movie. Mm-hmm. And that was...
And that's just from reading it.
Just from reading it, yeah. Music, right? And I was just sitting... After I read it, I remember going to the piano in the living room and just messing around and coming up with that thing and just being like, oh, yeah, this feels like Batman. Like, I remember thinking in my head, like, if I were Batman, if I were wearing that suit and I'm like stalking, what would that feel like? Mm. Like what kind of tension would that be in my head? And what does that emotion sound like, musically? And that's where just came up with that motif for him. And that was written and we recorded a version of it like almost 2 years before the movie was finished.
Hiring right now is hard. No one is more committed to helping businesses than Indeed. That's why they're giving away $50 million in Indeed-sponsored job credits to help businesses like yours hire great people fast. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring partner that can help you do it all. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed Data US. Indeed saves you headaches. You can interview virtually with no downloads, plugins, or purchases, and you can do it all in one place with Indeed. Even better, Indeed's the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. Sign up for Indeed now and get $75 credit towards your first sponsored job, plus earn up to $500 extra in sponsored job credits with Indeed's virtual interviews. Visit Indeed.com/onion to learn more. Claim your credits at Indeed.com/onion. Indeed.com/onion. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Now, we're all trying to eat better. We're all trying to get healthier. And that's a good thing. We should. But that doesn't mean we've got to have a boring breakfast. No, we can still eat fun stuff and it can be healthy. Like Magic Spoon cereal. It's really great stuff. If you like cereal, like I do, that cold milk on your cereal in the morning, oh, it's lovely. But with Magic Spoon, you don't get all the rubbish and all the sugar. It's actually very, very good. So if you're trying to cut down on sugar and carbs and unhealthy food, this is the stuff for you. I'll give you some facts. 13 to 14 grams of protein and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. The honey nut flavor has only got 1 gram of sugar. Only 140 calories a serving. It's keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free, soy free, and it's low carb. Build your own box. There are 9 available flavors and they are all fantastic. You've got cocoa, fruity, frosted. I love the frosted. Peanut butter, cookies and cream, maple waffle, blueberry muffin, cinnamon roll, and honey nut. And even more exciting, Magic Spoon has just brought back their cereal bars. They were so popular. They brought them back permanently. It's the perfect, convenient, on-the-go companion for your cereal. So go to magicspoon.com/onion to grab your custom bundle of cereal. And be sure to use our promo code ONION at checkout. You'll save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/onion and use the code ONION to save $5 off.
There was also a time when I worked with the Wachowskis, who are both amazing, mm-hmm. and they said, we would like you to write the score for the movie before we shoot it. And this was for Jupiter Ascending. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. They're like, you know, because when you're making a movie, you use, and you're editing it together, they use what they call temp music, which basically is just any music from anywhere you got, just rip it off a CD. And it could be from any movie. They could put the movie from, I mean, music from Star Wars into whatever. So they're like, we hate using temp music because it's like putting on somebody else's clothes. Right. It doesn't really ever fit right. And you have to work your butt off to trying to get it to look good or feel good or sound good. And they're like, so we thought if you could write the score before we shoot the movie, then we could just edit to that. And I was like, okay. So I went ahead and I recorded like, I don't know, 80 or 90 minutes of music. They said, what would you need to do that? I said, could you give me, note cards, which describe each character, and note cards, which describe the main scenes that are going to be the big set pieces, and the overall story. They sent me all of the artwork, all the production artwork as they were designing things. I had this whole book of stuff that I could look through. If I wanted inspiration, I could look through all of this. And it was basically like writing an opera, you know, to something. And it was so fun and freeing just to go ahead and write whatever you wanted. And we went over to London, recorded it at Abbey Road. And we had this, it was just this incredible experience of like, okay, now we're going to find out how much of this actually works in the movie that they shoot. So I think in the end, 75% of it worked and 25% of it, we went back and scored traditionally. Like I get the picture and I would score it to picture. But 75% of it was from the stuff that we recorded from that initial run, which was crazy.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. And the Wachowskis take the music in their films very seriously, don't they?
Yes,
it's
they
a big
do.
Deal.
Yes, yes.
I love the soundtrack to Cloud Atlas. I know Cloud Atlas was kind of a little bit...
it's a crazy movie.
...criticized by, I thought it was lovely,
I love
too.
It, too.
So ambitious. And, of course, a little flawed, like most films are, but that reach is so ambitious. And
they're the best.
The music in that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, just to touch on the Batman for a second, I don't know Matt Reeves, but I read a lot of interviews with him during his process, and he had mentioned that he listened to Something in the Way by Nirvana a lot, which has that, well, obviously features in the movie quite a lot, but has that relatively iconic bass line.
This is the crazy thing. So
that is also part of your music, right?
And So when I read the script, I had no idea that that song was going to be used. And I am embarrassed to say I did not know that song. I wasn't a big Nirvana fan, so I wasn't sure about that. And then when I first saw the cut of the movie, I was realizing, oh, wait, these actually work together really well. They were in different keys, but we had to, once we put it in the right key, it was like, oh, they actually work well together. Yeah, because Batman has that bum, 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 bum. So it's a different rhythm, but it's the same, it fits
in
the same way.
They complement each other.
Yes, they complement each other. So that was like a complete lucky strike.
Right.
You know, completely lucky on that one.
Have you been in a situation? I mean, that's obviously not exactly what I was, the thing that I'm going to mention now is that have you been in a situation with a filmmaker where they've said, hey, Michael, we really want you to score our film, but here's the tonality song that we want it to be around. It doesn't work like that.
Usually those things are happening separately.
Right.
They probably should happen together. It'd be a lot more cohesive. But a lot of times the songs that they pick for movies aren't picked until somewhere deep into editing or sometimes they might have one that they want through the whole thing, but that changes all the time because sometimes the song that they have their heart set on is way too expensive to get.
Right.
Or, you know, not available or whatever, or they come up with a better idea. So it's always changing.
Right.
So in the scoring side of things, I'm usually sort of apart from all of that.
I'm so surprised that they got Something in the Way by Nirvana, because you would assume that's relatively expensive, right?
But yeah, I would, yeah.
But the way that it works with Bruce, you know, because I don't think they've yet achieved, although they did in this particular Batman, the idea of that slight negative, emo, yes, heavy vibe. He's an orphan, but he's a billionaire. He gets looked at in the streets. He's kind of an unwanted kind of celebrity of sorts. He's got a lot of self-loathing, as we know with Kurt Cobain and a lot of the music that he had written because of his mental health. There is issues with fame. There is issues with feeling worthless and stuff like that. And that it's one of the, I said to Billy before he watched the film, I said, I'll try not to spoil it for you, but I said, it has one of the greatest needle drops in recent memory of a movie. Just that start of that Nirvana bass line is so good.
It's great.
And the pushing of the little boy, because obviously he's seen what's happened at the start of the film.
Yep.
And you see Bruce watching him thinking, I watched my parents die in a violent
way.
I'm that kid.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I love about Matt is he's not afraid of bringing in sadness to something. It's to really go after real emotions for something.
Yeah.
Even if you watch the Planet of the Apes movies that we've done together, like they are littered with sadness, the whole thing. And it's something I love to tap into as well for things, because I feel like there's such a connection to people through sadness, through understanding, through all of that. So I think musically I tend to do that. Well, I mean, if you just watch Lost, half of that is just all sad, you know? Yeah.
And a lot of the Pixar stuff. I mean, the profundity of things like Up and Inside Out. Out, I mean, Coco as well, but I mean, Inside Out, I think, is one of the most sophisticated tellings of emotions to young people. You know, the fact that great message in Inside Out, that like sometimes sadness can teach us really valuable things about our life
it's not something to push away.
Right.
You know,
or be scared of. Because if you're scared of feeling sad, and that's going to happen at some point in your life, how do you manage it when it actually shows up?
I mean, as a parent, I think the worst thing you can say to your kid is don't be sad. Don't be sad. Yeah. It's like, no, embrace that sadness and let's talk about why you feel that way.
Exactly.
You know, but everyone's knee-jerk reaction in the world is to don't be sad, or a kid who falls down and hurts his knee who's crying, and you tell the kid, oh, you're fine, you're fine. It's like,
don't cry.
I had this moment yesterday.
Yeah.
I took my dog to the park.
Your dog cried.
My dog get bit by a huge dog.
Oh my gosh.
Your dog's tiny.
My dog's tiny, he's 12 pounds. And this dog had my dog in his mouth. So I went over and I was freaking out, you know. And anyway, the dog was fine. And
well, both dogs?
Both dogs were fine.
Just checking.
Then I've got the dog then, who's normally left in the house when I'm out doing stuff. I took him in the car everywhere.
Oh.
And I picked up my son at one point, and my wife was already in the car. And Jack said to me, why is Bob in? And I was telling him, and I said, you know, I don't like my family being sad. Wow. And then I immediately thought of that movie, and I said, but don't feel like you can be sad.
Yeah, yes.
I said, you can be sad, but I'm just going to, like, you know, do everything I can to help you out, whatever it is it's making you sad, make sure you tell me. And I actually had that moment in the car because of that movie.
But did you notice that was Bobby a little traumatized for the rest of the day, or was he all right?
Maybe I wasn't sure.
Maybe
because
you were traumatized.
Yeah.
He had a big exercise day. This isn't about music here, man.
No, but I love the Bobby
It's okay,
stars.
But maybe you had to embrace your sadness.
Yeah, exactly.
He had a big exercise day before he ended up
before
in this dog's mouth.
Before he was almost eating,
So I don't know if he was just exhausted, but at one point he was on my knees and he just became a dead weight.
Oh.
I thought, this is it. I thought he was dead.
Oh, no.
So I put my hand on his little heart, but it was still going, and I said, Bobby. And he just sat up straight away. But I thought he'd folded into my lap.
Yeah, yeah. What a beautiful place to die. That's where I'm going to die, by the way.
I know you are.
In your lap.
I'm going to be the one holding your throat.
Yeah, you'll be struggling, yeah. Can't wait.
Checking your heartbeat.
Just to give
Wait. I got to understand.
Hold on.
What did the other dog's owner, how did they react? Yeah.
Right,
he's hungry. He's hungry. Don't worry. He's hungry.
Exactly. I hadn't been to this. I hadn't been to this dog park for a while, and now it's sort of been overrun by dog walkers.
So
it's a dog walker, and there's another dog walker who goes there who I love. She's a wonderful lady and looks after. I say that as if she's 100 years old. She's just a woman kind of thing.
Yeah.
She looks after Bobby sometimes when we're out of town, and she said that this dog walker sometimes isn't keeping a good eye on his dogs. And this dog was becoming more aggressive over the weeks. She'd noticed.
We'd eaten a couple of chickens, a rabbit, a gerbil. He was getting ready for a dog.
He was ready for a terrier.
Can I just give you a piece of advice? Go on, if it happens again, if that big dog grabs hold of Bobby in his mouth, what you need to do is lick both your fingers and shove them up the big dog's
taters.
Yeah.
Because he can't have an animal in its mouth while fingers are going up its bottom.
Yeah, it's going to release the animal.
Will you promise me that you'll do that?
It might turn on my hand, though.
It might break your fingers off.
Or might be your best friend.
We might fall in love.
Exactly. You never know.
To get back to music.
Please.
Now, this could be different in everything that you do, but what is the process normally for you of the actual melody, chords, orchestration? Do you do all of that, or do you get a melody and a chord structure and you say, okay, that's good, let's send that to them?
I'll do the rough orchestrations of all of it. Like, I'll do these, you know, because what you have to do also is you do what they call mock-ups, you know, so I can do a mock-up on the computer of what it's going to sound like. And that way you can show the director what it's going to be like against picture and all of that. So to do that, you know, you're using strings, patches, and all the kinds of things like that.
Horns,
woodwinds, piano, harp, whatever it is. So I have a whole setup that has all of that stuff at the ready. All you have to do is choose which one, and then you can play the piano, and that's the sound you get.
And if you don't mind me asking, how do you write harmony and orchestration for different instruments? Do you do that? The reason I'm asking is I asked Howard Shore once, and he says, look, I'm old school. I sit with a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And that to me would be like somebody saying, build a spaceship and go to the moon.
it is a bit like that.
I enjoy music, but I have to work it out
from
my gut. I can't sit and say, okay, theory, this is, like yeah, all theory, the, yeah. Do you do all
I
that?
I used to do a lot more of that, but now it's all, you know, you can, the computer has basically replaced paper, you know?
Yeah.
So they have notation programs. So we do it on a program called Sibelius, is where all the final sort of orchestration is done.
Right.
I do all my writing in a program called Digital Performer, and that's where it has all those tracks. So that way, when I hand that off to the orchestrator, he's already knows, okay, the strings are doing this, the woodwinds are doing this, brass is doing this.
You've already done all that.
I've already done it, and it's up to them to then tie it all together, finesse it. They might, you know, they have to also, it's a lot of detail work, which is incredible, and all of the articulation. So what I'll do is I'll write on top. I'll give notes on top. Okay, this is legato. These strings are playing this way, that way. They're crescendo into this. This is loud. This is you know, piano. This is forte. Uh-huh. All of those things. I write all of that in there. So they have a perfect guide for what to do. And I happen to work with one of the greatest orchestrators on the planet. His name is Jeff Kricka. And he is like just, he's magic. This guy is magic. He can do anything. And there are times if you're really rushed, I could say, Jeff, I just wrote the bare bones to this. I need you to fill this out and here's exactly what I want. And he can do it in 2 seconds. And Jeff's an amazing composer in his own right too. Like he can do that as well. But it is a team effort without a doubt, you know, getting everything down. I can do all of that. And also, the other nice thing about having it that way is when the director comes in and checks it out, if there's something that they're not feeling right about, we can explore it. I can go, okay, let's change it. And I'll change this. I'll say, okay, well, instead of maybe what you're feeling is that this instrument's giving too much of something and let's change it into something like this right in front of them. And then they can go, yes, that works. As opposed to waiting, like I like to do all of that ahead of time as opposed to doing it on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's a mess, you know, and then you're okay, and you can do it, and I can change things very easily on the stage as well.
Just a much longer process.
Yeah, it's longer, and you're like, okay, you guys play this, you don't play this instead of that, and you're like passing out new parts and all of that stuff.
So you're kind of back to that piano lesson where you've got the melody, but, I'm changing what's going on underneath.
Exactly,
And that will give you whatever feeling that you're wanting or a director's wanting.
Yes, exactly, yep.
God.
Before Billy's son, who's 16 now.
16.
Was born. Billy, and I think Ali was your girlfriend at this point. Not even your fiance, not even your wife, certainly.
Mm.
Billy and I went to see Up at a cinema in Westwood. Have you ever seen me cry that much watching a movie?
Honestly.
So it was Billy.
It was Billy in the middle,
yep.
His wife to his right, me on the left. And I don't generally cry this much in the movie. I was doing that, like, catching my breath cry, like,
yeah.
trying to, like, catch my breath. And Billy looked over me a few times and just going, you all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm all right, I'm okay.
But for an hour after.
I mean, I was devastated watching that film.
Yeah.
And a huge part of that was the song. Mm-hmm. And that particular song that you wrote, which we touched upon at the start of the interview, has taken on this life, excuse me, of its own. I follow a lot of positivity kind of social media sites.
Yep.
There's a guy called Tanks Good News that is just good news that you find around the world he puts up. Or there'll be clips of little kids doing something great or soldiers coming back from, you know, service and all this kind of stuff. I would say at least 60 to 70% of the time, it's that iconic song from Up. So you should probably be getting money for this, Michael. But if it's all right with you, and you've probably been asked this question so many times, but when you sat down to create that beautiful, simple piano song, you obviously knew the story, you knew what was going on. How did you kind of decide on this melody?
Well, that one, if I recall correctly, happened in the shower and not at the piano.
Wow.
That was when I had seen the movie and I've been thinking about it. And Pete Docter and I had a discussion. And Pete was like, it'd be great if it felt like it was like a music box sort of a melody that you could hear. And you remember. And it's just sort of like, and we also knew that we wanted some sort of waltz that felt like a couple's dance. But I remember being in the shower and that melody was in my head. And I remember thinking like, oh, I should go write this down. And then I said to myself, well, I'm not going to write it down. If I remember this tomorrow, then maybe that's a good sign. So I just let it go.
Terrifying.
That's how one goes.
I let it go. And then the next day I was like, all right, I was back up at the office. I was like, let me see if I can remember this thing. And I did.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, that's a good sign. So if I remembered that, there, then that's maybe that's I'm onto something. Mm-hmm. There was another version of that melody that happened first, or maybe it was born out of this, but because you don't always just nail it right away, and you're just sort of like, but the bones were there, and out of that came that theme. And I remember playing it for Pete, and he was like, "Yep, that's it," you know. And it's, when we recorded that on the Warner Brothers sound stage, the Eastwood scoring stage, and which is where they recorded tons of Warner Brothers cartoons and all this stuff, which is great. It's got a great history to it. But I remember when we recorded it. So for the first time, we're doing that scene. It's one of the first scenes we did. When the scene was over, everyone was just crying. Like everybody, like the musicians were crying, the director, the producer, all of us were in the booth crying. Everyone is just sort of like, okay, let's do it again now. Do it again.
Was this the opening? The
whole montage.
The montage.
Yeah. That was one of the first things that we recorded because we wanted to make sure that it was working and all of that, and that everything was doing what it needed to do. But even then, you know, because think about these guys that have been working on this film. You know, they had been working on this film probably 5 years by that point, you know, at least. So when you hear something that connects like that, you're not only thinking about what's happening in that movie, you're thinking about what you went through, you know, in the last 5 years of your life, and how hard these things are to make and everything you do to kind of to get to this point. So it all these emotions come up with music. It's such a weird thing. It can trigger you in so many different ways.
Yeah.
You know?
And like you had said, that melody is everything that you guys tried to achieve. I love the idea that you mentioned a music box thing in terms of it builds. It starts off just a little slow in its timing, and then it kind of builds up to this waltz thing. But this idea almost that there's something not quite fully realized about it at first, and then the melody kicks in, and in the same way that the major characters' lives kind of start a little, they're not quite there yet. They're kind of a couple, they're figuring stuff out, and then it builds. They get married and they have this life. And my God, I mean,
it's
what an incredible. And so you won an Oscar for the score of Up, right?
Yes.
But more than anything else, do you think it was probably driven by that particular melody?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so. I mean, that I think it was really that scene, that married life scene.
Yeah.
Because the thing about that scene is you watch it and you're like, it's everything in your life. It's everything you will go through in your life.
Mm.
And some of those things you may have gone through already. Mm. Some of those things are things you're going to go through, you know, and it's just that whole sort of, that incredible tapestry that is sort of suggested by that, by those scenes is, you know, we can all relate to that.
Yeah,
we can all relate
to
that.
My son has as well, in his class, he was supposed to do some piece of movie making this year. And his first choice, although it became too much for him, was to try and do a live version of that montage.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That was
that's ambitious.
When someone said, what are you going to do this year? That's what he said.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's touched so many people at every level of age. And as you say, because you're at one level.
Yeah.
You know, he might have been falling in love with someone at that point and just related to that.
Exactly.
Or, you know, and you're getting old and probably
what
won't make
mean?
Up. I'm not just saying.
Yeah, no. Now, Oscar night, because Billy and I were waiting for our Oscars. They're in the mail, they said, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, they're coming.
Next
I'm
couple
sure
of weeks,
they're
so they're on the way. But Oscar night.
Yeah.
Is everyone talks about this idea of, you know, as soon as you hear your name, the next kind of 5 minutes of your life is a little bit of a blur. It's a daze. Did that happen?
Yeah,
for
it
you
did.
Like
because
that?
I remember I walked up. I think I went to the wrong spot too. Like I didn't even know what was going on, and they were like pointing this way. Oh, I'm over here. Okay, and going up there. And I remember I didn't prepare anything to say. I was sitting alongside, you know, James Horner. Hans Zimmer, you know, these guys who are just like incredible and heroes in different ways as well, sure. You know, especially James, you know, who sadly passed away, but growing up listening to their stuff and you're sitting in this row and you're like, all right, this is just fun to be here. That's great. Yeah. And then you hear your name, you're like, wait, okay. As you're walking up there, and I probably why I didn't go the right way because I was thinking you have to say something. You have to say, what are you going to say? And all I can remember was that, you know, my parents were always incredibly supportive of whatever ridiculous, crazy thing we wanted to do. You know, like they were both teachers, and they were both the kind of people that, like, when I said, "Well, I want to make movies," and they were like, "Ugh, I don't know how to do that," but my dad would be like, "Here's my movie camera, and I'll get you film, and we'll figure it out."
Great.
You know, so no matter what it was I wanted to do growing up, they were just always encouraging. Which I am forever thankful for, because the idea of just being encouraged, especially when you're being encouraging about creative things.
Yeah.
Most people are like, get out there and play football or baseball. And that's it.
Get a job.
Yes. Get it. You know, and all of this. And, you know, and if you mention art in any fashion in many households in this country, it's just like, you can't make a living doing art.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like talking down to it and always putting it in a position of that's something you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do this other thing, which is more sensible, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My parents were the opposite of that.
Right.
They were just like, this is, so I remember I had friends who growing up, whose parents would tell them anytime they wanted to do something creative or artistic, they would tell them it was a waste of time. It's a waste of time. Why are you doing that? It's a waste of time. You know, you're
shame,
just drawing. Yeah. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely. But I remember just saying that, just recounting that story, you know, quickly on stage and saying, you know, and if you're a kid who's creative and you want to do something, do it. You should do it. You know, it's not a waste of time. I think any kind of art is not a waste of time.
No,
it's an expression of yourself.
And you'll end up with an Oscar.
Yeah. guaranteed.
Guaranteed. And that's the thing about art, isn't it? And being creative, even if it leads to none of that.
Yeah,
you are still sitting in the house and playing a piano or picking up a
guitar. Isn't it great?
Or doing a paint.
Yes.
What's going on
writing
in your brain?
A poem. It's great.
Yes. Yeah. That's what it's all about. It's just this being in touch with yourself creatively and just putting that time into enjoying something in a very peaceful manner.
Yeah.
You know, I love the fact that you're saying that you look at these positive things, you're into positivity and all that, because so much of this ridiculous world is the opposite of that.
Yeah. And so much social media, unfortunately, is that.
Yes.
The reason why I jumped off Twitter, I was on Twitter for a while, and then I started to connect to the fact that it seemed like the dominating narrative of Twitter was one of a slightly mean, gossipy classroom. And I was like, I don't want to be around people like just knocking other people's lives or criticizing people.
Yep.
And then what I realized with Instagram, if you want, Instagram can just be a place where you post a photo or post a video and you can disarm comments. And that's it. You're just saying, hey, here's something I saw or something I liked.
Yep.
And check it out. And then I started to realize that there are a bunch of people trying to change that narrative on social media of like, this can be a place to come if you are feeling down and maybe you want to see fluffy dogs or yes. funny kids or yes. people being silly, you know?
Yes.
I did want to just very quickly ask you, because you were talking about sitting next to Hans Zimmer.
Mm-hmm.
If someone out there listening to or watching the podcast were to say, were to ask you, what would be three amazing scores in movies that you could go pick up that are a great kind of learning experience for someone that might want to do this for a living? What are the standout ones for you?
I would say...
Why three?
Well, I like the number three. Would you prefer five?
It's the rule of threes. The comedy, yes, comedy rule of threes.
Yes, it always comes. One's going to be funny.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll try and make it funny. Well, I would say number one, there's too many to list here, yeah, so my head explains. But one of the ones I go to right off the bat is Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
Maurice Jarre, who wrote that score. And if you watch that, it's like a masterclass in scoring.
Right.
It's incredible in thematics, in tone, in emotion, all of those things. It's just such an incredible piece of work. I love it so much.
Okay, Lawrence of Arabia, one.
Okay, number two, I would say would be Planet of the Apes, the original one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to show you that it doesn't always have to be traditional, what mm-hmm. you're doing. It can be something, you know, emotion can be evoked by me knocking on this table or hitting something against the wall or doing crazy things. And Jerry Goldsmith, when he wrote Planet of the Apes, listen to that score. It is incredible. And it is nothing that you would expect. You know, it's all weird,
yeah.
crazy stuff. He did what they call prepared piano, which is you put screws in between strings, you put pieces of wood in between things. Yeah. So when you hit it, it suddenly sounds crazy and different.
Yeah.
Or you can just pluck the strings inside the piano, things like that. And he had all these crazy ideas that he brought to that picture, which I thought were just incredible. And I remember as a kid hearing that and just being like, what is that?
Yeah,
what cool. is that sound? You know, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So you have that, and so
you've got a nice cross section there because you've got epic, classic,
yes.
and then you've got kind of experimental, new wave,
yes.
and then you've got one left now, Michael.
I know, and I feel like I should do something that is like, you know, what's the third compliment to that? Which would be,
yeah.
but I'd be reaching. If
you should pick one of yours, to be honest. Yeah. I would. So if I'd written one of them, I'd pick it.
Yeah, I would too.
But I would say growing up listening, this is not a particular thing, but just growing up listening to Disney movies
Ooh.
Is like a crazy, Disney also had a huge importance, you know, put up a huge importance on all of their movies, you know, from Bambi, guys like Oliver Wallace, who wrote Peter Pan. That's one of my favorite scores Ooh. Ever, Ooh. That original Peter Pan score.
Yeah.
Check that out, because that is just, it's beautiful. Also, Frank Churchill did Bambi. I mean, all these guys that wrote during that time, they were incredible musicians who were just trying to make a living, just trying to, you know, get by. But there's this incredible wealth of music in the entertainment industry, and it's and you could spend years sifting through all of it, and yeah. it's all great. Poltergeist.
Oh, Spielberg, right?
Well, Toby Hooper, and then eventually, I think, Steven took over.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the story is behind that, but yeah, Steven Spielberg produced for sure. And, but Jerry Goldsmith did that score, and that's an incredible.
Okay.
Jerry Goldsmith's amazing. Like,
yeah,
I love it.
I kind of remember that score.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd also hear
Carol Ann's theme, the little girl. La, yeah. la, 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 la. You know, that scary kind
yeah,
of with all
scary.
The kids singing.
It's kids great. Being scary in horror films, really.
Oh, it's the best.
It gives me the heebie-jeebies. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I'd also like to throw into the ring.
Hold on.
Because I very often listen to it when I'm falling asleep
no
at
one's
night.
Asked you.
And this gives you amazing dreams, like really Ooh. Amazing dreams. If you're looking for amazing dreams.
Okay.
The soundtrack to The Hours, Philip Glass.
Oh, Philip Glass is amazing.
Very cyclical,
yes.
builds on its own kind of legend and
yep.
and kind of takes you in strange places. But it's this idea that, because Philip Glass is big on that, right?
Oh, yes, very much.
He creates a melody and then
yes.
builds on top of it.
And it's a very meditative kind of listening experience,
right.
which I love. Yes, yeah.
He was a taxi driver, Philip Glass.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Isn't that
and
crazy?
He's like, 80 some now, you know, I got to meet him and
wow.
and spend time with him. It was so incredible just to, you know, he's such an incredibly nice, interesting person. Yeah, he's great.
Billy and Dom eat the world.
Well, should we eat the world?
Do you want to eat something with this, Michael?
Let's do it.
Our producer, Johnny Clues, has actually, over the last few months or so, been making his own 3 homemade hot sauces. Oh. And we've been saying to him, but not hinting to the audience, John, if you get to a point where it's good to go and ready to eat and tasty, we've got to have it on Billy and Dom Eat the World. So this is the first of John's homemade delicacies.
Wow. Yeah. This is the first?
Well, tuna casserole.
Tuna casserole, right. But that came from somewhere else.
I came from somewhere else.
Yeah.
But this is John at the top of his game, creating apparently one of the greatest sauces known to mankind.
Yeah, does he have a name for it?
I don't know. We'll ask him when he comes in. I'm toying
with the idea of shaders sauce.
Oh yeah, it depends on.
That's
what
actually pretty
like.
Good,
isn't it?
Well, yes.
I asked him the other day, and I said
shaders.
I said, well, how does it go in terms of spice?
And he was like, extra spicy
shaders.
Yeah, I think it's spicy shaders. So sounds great. But we've obviously got a mild, a medium, and a hot.
Oh, here we go. Oh,
this is exciting.
Veggie tacos.
Okay.
Veggie tacos, you say, John?
I also have some chips.
Okay.
Thank you.
And he's going to tell us anything about the...
We'll do the veggie tacos. We'll do the chips, right, Bills?
Right, then.
There's plenty.
Yeah, get that.
Come on.
Oh, really?
All right. I'll grab one of them because I did skip lunch, if I'm honest.
We'll go mild, medium, hot.
So
here's Johnny Clues.
Yes, the rear one will be the mildest.
The rear one.
And that's an Anaheim hot sauce. Anaheim pepper sauce.
Okay, so Michael, we're going to start with Anaheim.
Okay.
Okay.
Anaheim. I'm going to put some on.
Anaheim pepper sauce.
You put a little bit over your thumb there, Michael. I don't know if that was intentional.
Don't worry about that.
Good job. It's on the paper. It's on the sofa too.
That thumb's been part of some amazing cards over the years.
Actually, it's really good. Right off the thumb. It's great. Yes. Yes.
I'll put one on a cracker. There you go, Dom.
Michael, do you know the soundtrack to The Mission?
Yes. Ennio Morricone,
That is
the greatest. That's what I mean. It keeps going. The well is too deep.
Mm. Viggo Mortensen bought me that once. Did he ever buy you anything?
Viggo's not bought me anything. He kissed you full on the mouth and bought you gifts. He once slapped me and kicked me down a pair of stairs.
Well, that's better than nothing.
That's actually equal. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Johnny.
John, I like spice, and I must say, if this is the mildest, there's a little bit of a kick.
There's a nice kick to that. That's the mildest. Now, what's in that one?
That's Anaheim peppers. I put like onion, whole garlic, some spices, various spices, maybe like parsley, dried spices, and then just a salted brine. And then I fermented it for like 3.5 weeks, I think.
Really?
3.5 weeks. So that tames the spice level.
John, you need to calm down.
Right, hold on.
You just need to calm down over there because you're getting very excited. Are you having it on its own?
Yeah.
Mm. Now, are you doing this just for yourself? Are you going to sell these? What's the...
No, it was a COVID project. I was just bored. I'm like, I wonder how hard it is to make hot sauce.
This is what we're talking about.
It's not that hard, to spoiler alert.
No, I think it's amazing. That COVID was bad for lots of obvious reasons, but good for digging into things that you've either always wanted to do or something you newly discovered that you wanted to try. And
absolutely.
I feel like there's going to be books written about it, years to come.
Did you do something, Michael?
Yeah, what did you get COVID into that was new?
I did an album. There was a crazy album I wanted to do that I never had a chance to do, never had time to do. And I was just, I wanted to do this. You know, in the 60s, they would have this music, exotica music. And it was basically like, what it would sound like to be somewhere else, maybe in the South Pacific or somewhere, but it was very sort of thematic, and it had lots of percussion and all of this cool stuff. And I used to love that music. We had a bunch of those records when I was growing up and loved it. And I was like, I want to make one of those albums one day.
Wicked.
So, and I also love like radio theater. I love listening to, old radio shows and stuff like Johnny Dollar and things like that, The Shadow. So I thought maybe I could mix those two ideas together. So I did sort of this science fiction story about someone who visits Earth and what that experience was like. And then each track was sort of a different chapter in that story.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I did that and put that out through Mondo.
What's it called?
It's called,
so many jobs you do.
Sorry, I
had 6 movies this year.
I honestly didn't know that one was going to stump you. What is the name of your album? I honestly didn't think that was going to be a difficult one.
me get my agent on the phone.
It was only because I wanted to listen to it on the way home.
It was the...
maybe the listeners can tell us. You know, send us in. Answers
bet,
on the postcard.
I bet John could find it.
Yeah. Here we go. Let's do it right here.
Right.
Yeah, this is great. This is embarrassing.
Let's get into the second sauce.
Yeah, but we have to score the first one.
Oh, no.
Well, we score all three. They're separate.
But we can't do scores for all. That'll take about 3.5 hours.
But if we score I'm just all three is
that's
what?
Why. I was like, because it's it Travelogue, Volume 1.
Travelogue, Volume 1.
I have to say, it's been a while.
So. I have to say, William, I absolutely disagree that
let's do it then.
Let's score the first one.
Right.
Flavor. So, we score these things based on three different categories. Flavor, the aesthetic, and usefulness, which was a Billy category.
So, aesthetic so meaning the color?
The look, the vibe. So, so flavor. I'm going to give mine a 6 out of 10.
I'll give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll give it a, like, I'll go 7 out of 10.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. Aesthetics is a nice color. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. It looks as if, like, ketchup. Blood has been mixed with piss. I'm giving it a
high score then.
I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. It gets an 11. Yeah.
That's a good one. And then usefulness. I mean, it's a hot sauce. Do you know what I mean?
Actually, that'd be great on scrambled eggs.
Oh, absolutely.
You can put it into all sorts of cooking. Yeah. You can take it with you to a cafe.
I'm giving it an 8.5 out of 10 then.
So am I then.
Right, this is the slightly hotter one. I'll
give you, it's a little, it's, so that will be the hottest one.
Michael needs to give it a score on how useful it is.
Oh, and how useful? It's an 8 for me because I'll put it on anything.
Right.
This is the medium one.
That's the meme. That's my favorite. Habanero. Hot sauce. I wouldn't say it's medium. It's probably like a medium. It's like a hot medium.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
How do you decide?
Well, that's what, like, Dom's a hot medium.
How are you deciding, like, the hot scale? Do you actually, like,
because the raw habanero is, like, obviously very hot because it's habanero, but the mango kind of tames it by, you know, putting in, like, half a mango into that, but it's a little bit more fruity, which complements the habanero, which kind of has a fruitiness to it.
Buffalo Wild Wings, which I should not be advertising on the show, but I'm going to do it anyway. They do a whole slew of flavors with their wings, and they do a cauliflower wing if you're a vegetarian, and my favorite flavor that they do is mango habanero, John.
Really?
So, yeah, it adds up.
Here you go, Michael. You kick that off.
All right.
Oh, I'm exhausted.
Right, here we go.
Right. Nobody panic.
Pass that over here.
This one's a sneaker.
This one's different.
Give me a heads up. It's a sneaker.
It's a sneaker, is it? Okay.
Let's see.
Put a little bit on there.
Come on, squirt your sauce on my veggies.
Oh, you take. And a bit on your chips.
Right, there you are.
Enjoy that.
Lovely. Here we go, Johnny.
Okay. Let's see if I'm going to have it just on a chip. Virgin style. What? Hot, all right?
Oh, I like it.
Are you all right?
It is magnificent.
Ooh, that is
I love
hot.
That. That's amazing.
That's medium. My God, the hot one's really going to give us a talking to.
I love hot sauce. I love hot sauce too, any level of it.
Same. I want to find ghost peppers because that's like my dream now.
Now, do you grow them? Any of these sauce? Yourself? You can grow these yourself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm a horrible gardener. But if Dom should grow some ghost peppers and we can make some hot sauce out of it.
Yeah. My girlfriend, Andrea, she had this incredible garden through COVID. She just went garden crazy. Mm. And she made this massive garden with tomatoes and all kinds of peppers and all kinds of, I mean, it was incredible. So in the morning, I just go grab a bunch, chop them up, throw them in the eggs. And it now she doesn't want to continue doing it because it's so much work. Yeah, it's a lot of work. So it's someday.
I tried growing a few things. All of them died, unfortunately.
I'm so sorry about that. Right, now let's score it. So flavor, aesthetics, and usefulness. Flavor, I prefer that one to the mild one. I'm giving that, John, a 9 out of 10. I'm enjoying it.
I'm giving it a 9. It's a good, it's a solid 9 as well.
Yeah, Michael.
Absolutely.
9 across the board.
Yeah.
Wow.
The look,
honored.
I prefer that look to the medium one. It's got a kind of a tangerine-y type vibe.
Which one is it?
Yeah.
This one, the one that's slightly open.
There. Yeah.
I'm going to give it an 8.5 for the look.
And it'll sneak up on you because that doesn't look hot.
No.
I'm going to give this look a 10 because when you brought it into the room, I looked at that one. I was like, that's the one I want to try because I don't know. It looks like it has a creaminess to it.
Yeah.
It looks great.
William?
Yeah. I'll give it a 9.2.
He's a high John.
High score, I'm impressed.
I mean, that is the one I use most at home.
Oh, it is?
As you can obviously tell, because the Anaheim one has nothing missing.
So what's the name of this one again?
That one's just Mango Habanero.
Mango Habanero.
But you add the mangoes after. Oh, just a pro tip. You don't add them during the fermentation.
I would probably give the name... like a 5.
Yeah, you need to work on the name, John.
So I think it needs something more.
Well, maybe I'll name them after your movies.
Okay. Just oh, movies. Really? The up sauce. The inside out sauce.
Turns your haters.
Inside out.
Sorry about that, guys, if there's any families listening.
Usefulness. Well, it's the same as any other hot sauce. You put it in your scrambled eggs. You put it in your rice dishes.
Yeah,
I'm giving it a 9.
I would throw it on anything. Maybe even more because it's got
that. I put it on my sandwiches.
I'm going to go 9 out of 10.
This is, guys. Right, so now this is the last one, John. Is that
right? Yeah, that one's probably my second favorite, but it's going to be a little bit hotter because there's nothing to cut it with.
Now, do you think you should be telling us which is your first favorite and second favorite?
I know, I
feel
like I was going to wait, but I
don't know. I feel like you're...
Oh, now what's the name of this one, John?
That's just, another really unique name. It's just called Habanero Hot Sauce.
So this is no mango. No mango. That's what you could call it. No mango. Michael?
No mango.
Yep. Thank you.
Now I'm just going to try this simply on a chip. It's hot. I wouldn't say it's any hotter than the mango habanero, to be honest, Michael.
Throw that on there, Tom.
I'm just going
to... And then, just on that. And then in there,
now. It's not that hot. I'm not dosing you, honestly.
Right, come on, give us that.
I mean, it's hot, but it's not hotter than the mango one.
I did learn that like
it's really good.
Like, it keeps fermenting when it's in those bottles, so it's like every day it's essentially getting milder and milder. So
if
you straight up, it probably would have been a lot hotter.
So what's the shelf life of at what point?
I'm pretty sure
it...
it's like almost not a lifetime, but it's a long time because of fermentation. It's almost like honey where it just prevents it from going rotten or anything. I believe.
Let's see.
Just maybe give your t-shirt a dusting down because you're covered in crumbs like an old man that's lost his mind.
Some of that's dandruff.
Is it?
Yeah.
Some hairs. The
bigger pieces.
It's Bob's hair.
Yeah, probably. Some of that. Oh, poor Bob.
Lovely.
Right. Hey, Johnny. That's nice and healthy. I just touched my nose and my nose is burning now.
Don't touch your eyes.
Yeah, no, don't touch your eyes.
That's really good.
John, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that feels like a very good, everyday hot sauce.
Yeah, that's why half of it's missing.
I'm putting some more of the mango one on my taco to finish
off. Yeah, belt some into mine as well. That was absolutely lovely.
Right, should we give the final one some scores?
Yeah. Well, we sort of did the mango one last.
We should have.
You see,
it was the best.
Yeah.
Because that's disappointed me now.
I'm sorry.
That third sauce was, a distinct disappointment.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You could call it distinct disappointment sauce. That's a good name for it.
Good name again.
Remember we were talking about sadness?
Yeah.
It feels, I had a wave of sadness.
Definitely in a minor key.
It was actually really good.
Let's score it in that case. Billy, you kick it off. Start on the low end.
It's still very good. And if it was the first sauce, it would have been a high score.
It's not. It's the last sauce. Keep that in mind.
Right. 6 out of 10 then.
6 out of 10. Yeah, it's not as good as the mango one for me. I'm going to give it a 7.5.
I was just going to say 7.5.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, let's be 7.5.
And now, Dom, how does it look to you? Which one is it again?
It's this one. It's the one closest to me.
This one.
That one.
It's all right.
It's sort of in between these two, what it feels like.
All right.
Yeah.
So
it's a 7.
Yeah.
It's a 7 in terms of looks.
I'll give it an 8. I think it looks nice, John.
Yeah.
Is it useful?
I guess I'd go 7.5.
7.5. Is it useful?
Yep.
I mean, is it any more useful than the mango one? I don't think so.
I think the only use it has is to say that the mango one is better.
Yeah.
So that's basically how useful it is. You put it against the mango one and you say it's not as good.
It's the reason the number 2 was invented.
Exactly.
Okay, there we go.
Okay, I'll give it, for usefulness, we'll give it a 4.
I'll be slightly more charitable. I'll give it a 5.5.
Michael.
Oh, wait, on usefulness? I'll give it a, 6. I mean, I'll give it a 6.
John, a success.
John,
wow,
thank
you so much.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Billy and Dom Eat the Worlds ever, and my mouth is in fire now.
Yeah, they're sneakers. It's going to be
it's the best.
Yeah, give it a few minutes, and you're going to be like, woof.
Yeah. I love that feeling.
And did you make the tacos too?
Yeah, no. Those are from Cactus Tacos on Vine. If
All right.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. Was that free? Don't give free things away. Free ads.
Thank you, Cactus Tacos.
Absolutely delicious, Tom.
Well, Michael, it's been fantastic having you on as a guest. Billy and I, we're all very aware of just how busy and in high demand you are. You said you got 5 movies coming out this year?
I had 6 movies.
I wouldn't ask you to name them, Michael, because you didn't even know your album's name.
I believe me, I've already tried this before, and I can't. So let me try. I'm going to say, all right, Jurassic World.
Yes.
Dominion, and then Spider-Man.
Yeah.
No Way Home. The Batman. Ooh. Then Thor, Love and Thunder.
Lightyear.
And then there's another one, a movie called Next Goal Wins, which is...
Oh, Taika's movie.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's a lovely movie. I love it so much.
Shot in Hawaii, right? With a lot of people that I know from Lost work.
It's so beautiful.
Oh, cool. Great. Taika's an amazing filmmaker.
Really looking forward to that.
Taika's the best and one of the greatest people. I loved. I was so lucky working with. I got to work with him on Jojo Rabbit, which was cool. One of my favorite. But Hunt for the Wilder People that he did. That's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
I just love that movie so much. So
he's so funny, Taika. He's such a funny dude.
He's the best.
Look at the mess you've made. You're a disgrace. Well, Michael, thank you.
Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
I couldn't believe it when we heard you were coming on.
Yeah, we were so thrilled, Michael.
Oh, come on. No, anytime. Anytime.
I'm so lucky that I got to know you during the making of Lost, because if we'd have asked him at this point, he would have said absolutely
That is not true.
Yeah. But because we got to know you. What was that, 15 years ago now, making Lost? 20 years ago, maybe?
I think it was 72 years ago now.
Wow. This is time for the up theme.
Yes, exactly. You and I first met in 1942, was it?
Wow.
Yeah, no, that was an experience.
It really was. You know, that was, a lot of people have said this to me over the years, and I totally agree with it. Because of the way that TV watching has changed now, that we tend to binge things that are on, and something will drop the whole season. Lost, you could make a strong argument to say, was the last show that you had to watch on that Wednesday night. Because if you missed it, later on in the afternoon, someone would ruin the moment for you.
And you couldn't wait to get to your group the next day to talk about it.
Right.
Whoever your group of friends were, whether it was at work or whatever it was, you always wanted. I felt like Alias had a bit of that too, but Lost was the king of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's what I love about what Marvel's doing in terms of their shows, the way that they'll put one a week.
Right.
You know, you get one a week. So you get to, I think, you know, with my kids when they were growing up, I never let them binge things. We always had one a week. You know, because they grew up watching like the Brady Bunch and all these things. We do one a week. And I think in that week's time, you get to think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and you get to, as opposed to when you're just eating it like crazy, like, you know, if you were to get baked and eat 30 of those, whatever they called,
fizzy sweets.
Yeah, fizzy sweets.
Fizzy sweets.
You're not enjoying them as much.
I agree.
Yeah.
I was saying to Billy.
And also your mind mulls it over. Mm. And if you watch some of those really old weeklies, the end and the start would be kind of different.
Yeah.
Because your mind would go, oh, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to go over the cliff much as I thought he was.
Yes. No, yeah. I think that's a huge thing to be put some space between viewings. It's important.
Yeah. I was saying to Billy during COVID, obviously there's been some crazy things that have happened to all of us during COVID and some hopefully positive things that have happened as well. The thing that I am now trying to work at getting back to where it was or hopefully better is my attention span. My attention span took a real knock during COVID. No reading of books. I was watching little clips on YouTube. And like you said, Michael, I was binging whole seasons.
Yeah.
So now I just tend to not lean towards shows that don't allow me just to go, I'm going to watch this for 6 hours and it's done. And it's fried my attention span.
It's very easy to do, you know? And then especially during COVID, there's also this crisis going on. So you're checking all the news and you're always looking at this terrible stuff. It's just, I think everyone's going through this healing process of getting out of this, what's happened and what is still somewhat happening you know, to us as well. We're just going to have to live with it.
Well, so happy to know, Michael, that during the COVID experience, which was a topsy-turvy time for all of us, you were maintaining an amazing artistic integrity.
Yes, I was writing an album that I couldn't remember the title of.
That I'm going to listen to on the way home.
Brilliant. Well, it's been brilliant having you on, Michael.
Thank you so much. Brilliant. Anytime. Hope to come back.
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. Anytime. Thanks. Thank you.
Well,
Dom,
that was one of the more interesting interviews that we've had with our good friend Michael Caccino. I mean, is there anything that you can't do, that man?
musically.
I think that might be one of the most impressive resumes. And if you want to see his resume online, check it out. But yeah, the movies that he's worked on in the last kind of 20 years or so and will continue to work on.
And what a lovely guy as well.
Yeah.
You know, no sort of ego about the whole thing.
No. Amazing. Just loves his job, works from a place of passion and obviously doing the thing that he's always wanting to do. So, of course, you're going to be a happy camper doing that. Fantastic. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Of course, as we always mention, if you want to get in touch with us, we love hearing from you. You can leave comments on our YouTube channel. That's The Friendship Onion at YouTube. You can also leave questions and concerns and rate and review and subscribe wherever you listen to our podcast. And
if you want to get merchandise and look as cool as Dom does this week with his Friendship Onion t-shirt, you can get that at thefriendshiponionpodcast.com.
Yeah, and we'll see you guys next week.
See ya.
Toodles.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.